Well, this talk has nothing to do with the main subject of this workshop. However, Shiv asked me to come. This is right after my jet lag trip from Europe, so I said, why not? However, thank you very much, because I learned so many things, and I'm so thankful to all of you, actually, by being here and giving me the opportunity to learn. I'm an outsider. I'm not from this community, actually. My expertise are in supercomputing and computational geometry, and that's why you see, if I manage, the real time, near real time, because this is where supercomputing comes into play. And of course, computational geometry comes into the play in the context of discretizing the brain so that we can apply finite element simulations and try to help, basically. Before I continue, I would like to say that this is mostly our experience with a technology that we are developing with Harvard Medical School. This technology is not an FDA approved, and since we have here for people from Harvard, I don't think that it is used by the neurosurgeons. I have actual data from 11 patients, but I don't think it's used by neurosurgeons in order to actually do the operation. However, because for the first time we were able to do that calculations while they were in the operating room, it becomes slowly an enabling technology, which hopefully down the road it will be integrated into as one of the tools that neurosurgeons will be using. I want to thank my students, Fedorov and Kot, who did most of the software implementation. However, this wouldn't be possible with the work of Nico Archip from Birman Women's Hospital, Peter Black, Oliver Klatz from INRIA, Alexandra Colby, Ron Kikinis, which is actually our mentor. He's at Harvard, but is mentoring us at William & Mary. And, of course, Simon Wolfert, who recently moved into Children's Hospital. And, by the way, he's an asset. He's a great person to have. Of course, again, most of you know here that this wouldn't be possible without the 15 years work of Francesco Les putting all this together. So we are really benefiting from the work of all these people, and I have to thank NSF who really supported us and recently Guggenheim Foundation. So basically what we are doing, the story is the following. You have the patient here. This is an open magnet, 0.5 Tesla. Here's the head. Here's the neurosurgeon. They get the intraoperative MRI. Of course, they have the preoperative MRI a day or a week ago. They sent the data to us, the intraoperative MRI. We basically do the patient-specific model. We calculate these deformations. And then we send back the image, which hopefully in the future the neurosurgeon will see, and see what is the current state of the brain at that moment, because the brain shifts because of the buoyancy and the gravity imbalance. And of course you have the neurosurgeon, I guess many of you here are neurosurgeons, cutting the brain, so you have quite a lot of deformation. So what we're in, the problem that we have is the brain shift. As you very well know, we have the preoperative data. We have quite a lot of data, actually. This is 1.5 Tesla MRI. We have functional MRI. We have data diffusion MRI, density diffusion MRI. And using this device, which is the open magnet, we're basically trying to calculate the current state of position or the functional data from the functional MRI, the tumor, and of course the tensor diffusion data. And the way that we do that is by, the problem there is that the data that we're getting out of here are 0.5 Tesla, three times less in quality. Moreover, though, there's not enough time to calculate the functional MRI and the data diffusion, tensor diffusion MRI. So, given all this, the fact that we have all the set of data that are high value to the neurosurgeon, the question is how we can maintain that value during the operation. And the way that we do that is with non-rigid registration, which is basically fusing all this data into the current state. Now, at this point, of course, we have lots of requirements. Three important requirements are accuracy. if we generate garbage very quickly, still garbage. Robustness is a very important issue, and of course speed is really an important thing that we are dealing with. So before I continue, I would like to, I don't want to erase this beautiful formula here, I would like to, since it's late in the afternoon, to give you a context how to think the rest of the talk. This is the 101 approximation. Consider that you have the deformation. Consider for time being that you have one dimensional space. And usually when we do approximation is we have certain measurements, and either we interpolate through those measurements, and this is how we actually calculate if we're interested for the deformation at this point, this is how we calculate the deformation. Now, in our case, this data are actually data with very low confidence because the neurosurgeon doesn't have the time to put landmarks during the surgery, or maybe some of you do it, but at least we are not aware of it. What we are doing is we calculate those data using some sort of block matching technique from computer vision and using normalized correlation coefficient, and those data that we have are very low confidence. So if we try to use interpolation, we basically base our interpolation on low-like confidence data, and likely our interpolation is not going to be correct. So instead, what we are doing is we are trying to do an approximation, and of course, our goal is if those data are correct, we would like our approximation, the error here, to be minimized. Okay, so keep this in mind, everything that I say. So the problem here is, and I would say, the problem here is that basically we are dealing with data which have outliers. We don't know where those outliers are. Of course, we would like to calculate this approximation, which is, in our case, the deformation, the brain deformation, in real time. And this is where the distributed and grid computing is coming. And of course, we would like to validate these calculations so eventually it will be used with high confidence in actual patients. At this point, we use it on 11 patients, but the neurosurgeon is not taking into account our results. Just we reached to the point so far, actually before we engaged in this research, this was taking about an hour and a half in order to do these calculations. After we engaged with including the distributed and grid computing, we reduced this together in 5 minutes, meaning getting the data from Harvard to William and Mary, do the calculations and sending back the data so that the neurosurgeon can see the data. So this is just in 5 minutes, and now the neurosurgeon can tell us whether or not we're calculating garbage or we're doing something useful. And I'll show you actual data from 11 patients. And finally, I will summarize and talk a little bit about my future work, which is mostly mesh generation for finite element calculations. And I have the opportunity at least to tell you what we're doing. And if there is interest, I will be very glad to talk to you afterwards. So what is the preprocessing in this experiment? We basically get the data at the very beginning. We segment at Harvard. When I say talk about brain here, I mean the intracranial cavity, the ventosus, and the tumor. The patient is put into the operating room. At that point, perform the first intraoperative MRI, and at this point, since we have basically the same subject, there's no movement in the brain, we perform rigid registration. And this is the first rigid registration we perform in order to orient basically our data with the preoperative and the first intraoperative data. Using this data, we generate a patient-specific biomechanical model, and with that, what I really mean is, as you're going to see later, is we're generating a finite element mesh which is specific to that patient. We are not using generic one. However, when it comes to all those constants, the constants that we are using are generic, we got them from the literature. And then we basically do the block matching, which actually generates those outliers. And at this point, the first problem that we have is that we don't have the tumor segmentation. And of course, the tumor definitely creates quite a lot of problems. So this suggests that these data are quite off at the very beginning. Now, what we are trying to do really, as I said, we are trying to fuse two images. We have one image on one side and another image on the other side. And what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to give you a mental, almost mathematical way to think what is happening. Basically, when you have one image, you have the same patient, and you have the brain from the same patient. The difference is that one has a brain shift and the other doesn't. So what we are trying to do is basically, with this term, we try to do a least square fit. Okay. However, the fact we recognize the fact that we are dealing with a brain, so we, with this term over here, what we take into account is the properties of the brain. Now, I should tell you that our assumptions are very simplified. We assume that the brain is uniform and linear, and the linearity, the story that we made up for linearity is that the deformation is 5 to 10% each time that we have an intraoperative scan, and thus we can get away with the fact that it is linear. However, we know that it's non-linear and non-uniform, and I'm glad to see this electrography, what was the term? Yes. So hopefully this will help us in the future. Now, since I'm a computer scientist, actually, I'm neither a mathematician nor a doctor. Since I'm a computer scientist, the way that I see, actually, you can see the same thing is that if you try to do this transformation, because this is a transformation of one image to another, if you try to do an affine transformation, this is not going to work because the brain deforms differently in different places. So what we are really doing is we are doing a local polynomial transformation. In different places, we calculate different transformations, and of course, all this is put together by finite element calculations. So these two formulations are the same, are identical, and you can think in either way, whichever way is convenient to you. So let me tell you a little bit about the polynomial transformations, so that what I really want to introduce is and help you to understand the problem with the outliers. And then, of course, in selfish into that, I hope that you will tell me some ideas how we can get away with those outliers. So the problem that we have here is, here I talked about one-dimensional model. I will give you the idea in two dimensions. Of course, everything that we are doing is in three dimensions, but it's very hard to draw three dimensions on the slide. So basically what you have here is you have those data which in green are the data that were calculated through block matching. Okay? They are at the very beginning with the preprocessing. What you see also here is we discretized, think of it like this portion of the brain, we discretized this portion of the brain with these triangular patches. Okay, these are the triangular patches. And what we are really doing is we're calculating, in other words, the analogy here is that, imagine that this is portion of the brain, we have this data from block matching, we are discretizing this portion of the brain, let's say here, with, let's say, isotropic uniform discretization. And what we are really interested to calculate is the displacement at the points at the vertices of the mesh, all the vertices of the mesh. Okay, and then once we have a good approximation of the vertices, then of course we can use linear interpolation and we can calculate the deformation at any place. So we're doing something very, very simple because our objective is to be done very quickly during the surgery. Okay? However, once we calculate the approximation, you see this is what we calculate from the approximation. There is some difference between the initial block matching and the approximation, and in some cases actually this is a huge difference, and at this point what we are doing, we say this data likely are not correct. We don't have high confidence on this data, so we throw away those data. So this is one of the problems. The second problem is that because we have sparse data, we don't get all this data everywhere, it is possible that we have areas of the brain where there's no block matching that can help us to move the brain from one position to another as we do the registration. So this places of the brain will remove and basically will not be moving, and basically this formulation is not going to give us a good approximation of what's happening in reality. In order to help a little bit our model, basically what we say is, well, don't forget that these triangular patches are related to a brain, and of course in this case it's a three-dimensional brain, and this brain has certain stiffness. So basically we're modeling the connections between the vertices as strings, and if those points will force the vertices to move, every other point that might not have any block matches eventually is going to move. Again, we have to deal with this kind of data which I haven't read, which are the outliers. And you see that the direction and the strength of these outliers are completely not trusted. However, it might be possible that they are trusted. The problem that we have is we don't know what data to trust. Now, this problem partially solved by this thesis by Olivier Clutch at Tinria, who basically said, I will have a loop where I consider basically here the same formulation. I will consider the least square approximation, which is basically gives us the difference between the images, plus the stiffness that gives us the property of the brain. However, slowly, this term here, actually this formulation comes from Lagrange multipliers, this term over here slowly is going to be reducing the effect of the properties of the brain, and eventually basically I have those two images matching close to each other. Okay. And heuristically though she decided to use 10 iterations and heuristically decided to use some difference here and some tolerance. So there are many, many parameters here who really we don't know. So what is happening here is very quickly what's happening is, this is happening actually, this is what we did with the last 11 patients. We get the data, they go to, this is actually a web service, I don't know if you are aware of web services. A web service is the same type of service that you have to use to check your bank account. The difference is that we are using it here in order to transmit data between different computers and do it transparent to the doctors. So the data is going to a client, from the operating room it's going to a client. This client sends the data to William and Mary. We initialize this. During that initialization, actually, the moment that they put the patient on the operating room and from the moment that they start the first real intraoperative the MRI, it takes about an hour because they prepare the patient. So we take this into our advantage to really bootstrap our machines and do everything that is necessary in order to basically busy wait at this point and wait the data from Harvard. Once we get the data, we calculate those vectors that I show you, which is the deformation, at those points, and then we send them back to Harvard, and basically they use interpolation to calculate the deformation everywhere. So basically we're using, initially we start with about 100 voxels, which we are high confident that they are pretty good to use for our approximation. Through this process that I show you, the outlier rejection process, we reduce them from 100,000 points to 40,000 points, and of course we need to calculate the points that we have to calculate is about 6 million. Okay, so before we started the process at Harvard was taking about 3,000 seconds. This is about an hour and a half in some cases. The time depends on the case, and we reduce it into 35 using, I don't want to it's too late now to talk about this computer science, but you see here the different optimization phases that we have done. This is the data from the actual patients. We have 11 cases. This is the position of the tumor. This is the sex and the age of the patient. And this is actually, I have to describe a little bit about this data. This is the 95% of house of distance, meaning everything that it, we throw away data that they have the top 5% difference in the house of distance. House of distance is basically a computational geometry term which allows us to measure the difference between two points, two clouds of points. This data indicate the house of distance calculated from the actual software that came with the OpenMRI, and basically what it is rigid registration. This is the displacement between the preoperative and the intraoperative data. You see sometimes in this case we have about 2 centimeters of displacement, some other times we have about 1 centimeter. This is the data that show one can say the error. I've been quotes here, this is not really the error, because we don't know what is the true solution. The difference between the rigid registration and the preoperative data. So it is reduced in this case from 2 centimeters to 1 centimeter, but still, for those of you who are neurosurgeons, you really worry when you're dealing with such a big difference. And of course, this is the data that we calculated using the non-rigid registration, meaning apply many polynomial transformations everywhere and taking into account everything that I said earlier. And you see that it's reduced into about 3 millimeters. However, I should point out that the maximum error, this is great news, however, the maximum error, it is appearing nearby the tumor. In other words, where you need the highest accuracy, we are getting the highest error too. It's much better, but still, this needs to be reduced actually, according to Ron, at least to 2/3 of a voxel, which is 2/3 of a millimeter, basically. And of course, you see here the improvement. And my goal as a computer scientist is not to change the model. The doctors are very happy with the model. So my goal is how to use computational geometry and the vast resources of computing that we have in the United States and Canada in order to improve that in a brute force way. One of the observations that we have seen is that I told you that there are many parameters, and I showed you some of the parameters. This is the error that you calculate. Actually, this is landmarks that we put before and after the operation in the preoperative and the intraoperative data. A doctor sit down and put those landmarks, so he's high confident that there is a match between those points in preoperative and intraoperative data. And this is the error that you have if you don't do anything. This is the error that you have if you use the default parameters that we're using in those 11 patients, and this is the error that you can calculate if you play with the parameters, with different parameters. Of course, the point is that we never know what is the value for the parameters, so we need to play quite a lot. And actually, here are some of the parameters. The Young models, Poisson models, and so forth. So here, only these parameters here, they take about, if you play with those parameters here, if you do only with the image, forget the physics, forget the mathematics, it takes about 250 registrations. Forget about doing one registration, it was taking 1.5 hours, 250 registrations would take forever. This is not of any use. However, fortunately, we have in the United States and here in Canada, you have this infrastructure which actually the government put quite a lot of money to put all the supercomputers together in order to do something useful. And I guess this is an answer to the Japanese supercomputing program. And it has to be different. So this is putting all the supercomputers together. And our hope is that the neurosurgeon will point out what is the area of interest. And we will run, actually all of those can be 1,000, we might require as well 10,000 processors, but this is something that we can afford to do now, is not a problem. And we can figure out what is the best set of values for the parameters in order to present the most accurate result to the neurosurgeon. However, this suggests that we need to have now automatic and interpretive validation technique of our registration results, which is, as very well you understand, a new PhD thesis. So far, what we are doing is, the doctor, this is how we validate our results, the doctor says this point, this is the preoperative, this is the intraoperative, and says this point and this point are the same, we can calculate the deformation, we can calculate the error, and this is how actually we can say that the accuracy that we're getting is within 3 millimeters. However, we don't know what's happening throughout the brain. Now, what we are doing is try to calculate different characteristics of the brain automatically, and of course, I hope we should be able to integrate, once it's publicly available, this electro... It's for me now, it's 5 o'clock, probably 3 o'clock in the morning, graph, and be able to take advantage of... You see, here's the tumor, actually. We were, roughly speaking, we can get the idea, but still, from quantitatively doing the analysis by just looking at that, is a big, huge difference. Summary? As I said, the method is less accurate where it's needed most. This is a major drawback. So, of course, so far, so good, but needs to improve further. What we need is a better selection of the outliers. At this point, we do in indiscriminate way we solve the outliers. The 5%, the 5% of error we throw away, and this is not the right way to do it. And this is where I need, and I got some ideas today by listening to you. And we need to do all those things in real time. At the same time, do the parametric space, because we have about 15 to 20 parameters easily. So we need to do all those in real time. And of course, in order to do that, we need to do intraoperative and automatic validation of our results, which is will take us at least 2 to 4 years, which is another PhD thesis. The reason that I'm here, actually, I'm glad when Siri invited me, is because eventually what I would like to do, I would like to use all the mathematical models that you are developing and use them as a filters, and on top of what we are doing, I would like to check whether or not, and of course, once we validate your mathematical models, I would like to check whether or not our automatic intraoperative validation techniques are consistent with what you're doing, and eventually build a database of knowledge which will help us to have some good progress in the intraoperative validation of the data. This is a long-term objective. And of course, what I'm really interested, this is my interest in my heart, is next generation. So what I'm really interested is to be able to at least attempt to improve, keep the model. Actually, I didn't say anything about non-visit registration. I haven't done any overview. Probably you know better than me there are many more methods which might be more reliable than this, but my goal is not to find the best non-visit registration method. My goal is, given that this method works and people at Harvard are happy with, how we can improve it by using also not only sheer power, but also smart computational geometry, and this is some of the ideas that we developed, and hopefully we will be using it in the future. Thank you very much.